And welcome to Knights of the Hardcover, a podcast dedicated to discussing fantasy books, their lore, and all of the things we love about them. My name is Brandon Castle, your assassin of the West Coast. And joining me on this task from the Taker's Guild, he was the first to tell me you can kill crotch fleas with lamp oil. It's Chris Lauer.
Hey. You know, I just want to say, Brandon, I really like these intros. You know, they're really clever, and I could tell you're working hard on them.
Yeah, man. It makes it a lot more fun to read the book when you're looking for introductions. And so, like, I just write them down, write an I next to it.
Yes.
And it's just like a fun, like, exploration thing while I'm reading the books. So I'm glad that you enjoy them.
Good.
And also joining us, we might have to stop the pod at certain places because we forgot to record. I mean, because he has to replace his dying legs. It's Zach Mysick.
Hey, glad to be here. Just got back from the tattoo shop and I'm looking forward to using them.
Oh, I can't wait to see what those tattoos do. Today we are covering the 2021 novel, The Black Tongue Thief by Christopher Buhlmann. We just talked for like 30 minutes without recording the podcast, which is why we're laughing about all of this. So we're re-recording some of this now. We'll get you caught up to speed and try to, you know, you missed probably 30 minutes of the greatest podcasting you'll ever listen to.
Oh, so good.
Oh man, it was Hall of Fame level stuff, but we're excited to talk about this book, sort of. Yeah. We had a discussion. Yeah, we're not recording this at all. Oh no, Chris is excited now.
This is like Tenacious D, like the greatest song. This is not the greatest podcast that's ever been recorded, but it's
this
a tribute.
Just a tribute. Yeah, it's just a tribute. That's all it is. So yeah, we'll cut in the summary here in a second. Kinch, our main character, studied at a school of thieving and is now indebted to the Taker's Guild. Because he has not kept up with his payments to the guild, he is marked with a hand tattoo on his cheek that lets everyone know of his status. He also has mild magical abilities, unnatural good look, and is able to read words from any language. In order to pay back his debt to the guild, he has been instructed to follow a woman from Aspanthia named Glava because they believe she has something to do with the giants coming down from the mountains and destroying Oystrom. Kinch convinces Galva to take him with her, and they are followed by a blind cat that Kinch rescued earlier. Before heading to Oystrom, Galva tells them they need to stop by a castle of a witch called Deadlegs before leaving on their journey. Deadleg gives them a staff that can make a horse and sends them with their assistant and niece, Norgal. After killing a mixling and selling its head, they decide to pay passage on a whaling boat. Before boarding, the blind cat, named Bully Boy, reveals himself to be an assassin sent by the guild to keep an eye on Kinch and tells him that his true mission is to get her to Oystrom. On the whaling boat, Kinch runs into a man named Malk from his hometown who knows the real reason he left the Taker's Guild. He dodged the draft for the Goblin War. After fighting off a kraken on the boat, the crew gets stranded on a deserted island. Goblins attack them on the island and take them prisoner. Norgal and Galva reveal they want to go to Oystrom to find a witch that disappeared when the giants attacked. Goblins capture them and then plan to eat them, but Bully Boy poisons the whole crew and frees them. They are rescued by a middle sea boat and rewarded for delivering the goblin ship. Galva then reveals that she is royalty in Aspanthium. Norgal and Kinch fall in love and get married for a month so they can clap cheeks. The crew meets up with a camp of Aspanthian soldiers to learn of their plan to fuck over the queen. Kinch gets Bully Boy tattooed onto his arm so the assassin Spetsa can't hurt them, but she starts infiltrating his dreams. They go to the city of Gravitsa, where both goblins and mankind live. Malk is killed in a game with the goblins. Galva needs to get her war corvid tattoo replaced, so she visits a magicker named Fulver. He fixes the tattoo and gives them three musicians to take with them. They go to Harava, which is now abandoned and run by giants. Kinch infiltrates the sewers and meets with men who captured the witch queen, Maria. After a sensual game of towers, the man reveals that the Taker's Guild, dressed like Oystrom soldiers, had attacked the giants so that they would retaliate against the city. Kinch investigates the tunnel that the guild took the queen through and meets up with the rest of the crew, who follows their trail to a cave on the mountain. With the help of the magical musicians, who are actually mice, they defeat three giants and enter the cave. There they find Queen Maria and a dying giant holding a magical book. The guild had to have tattooed real horses into the giant and then shrank her so that they could escape. Kinch reads the book the giant was holding, which turns out to be the leader of the Taker's Guild's journal, written in the murder alphabet, and learns of the secrets of the guild. The secrets are that they own many of the other guilds and created the illness that actually killed off the horses. Sesta appears from the tattoo on Kinch's arm and is killing them off. Kinch has to slit the throat of a dying Norrigal to summon Deadlegs, who wipes off the power of the assassin with a spell. Mariah cuts off Sesta's head. We learn that Norrigal was actually a younger version of Deadlegs. Kinch and Galva are going to take the Full Shadows book and investigate its secrets. Before they leave, they save the giant and take a horse from the tattoos with her. They most importantly save Bully Boy, who survives the whole ordeal. Wow, that was a fucking crossword puzzle of words to say. My God, I feel like I just walked through a maze. Holy shit.
All right, so that was exhausting to read through, guys. I'll tell you what, that was holy shit. That was a fever dream to have to read that twice in one day. I am gonna need a few more drinks of whiskey after that one.
Yeah.
Let's get to our thoughts. Overall thoughts. We'll start with Zach. Do it again.
Hey, thank you. I was not like a big fan of this book. I think on Goodreads, I gave it a 2 out of 5. I think rating it out of 10, I'd give it like a 3 out of 5 or 3 out of 10, maybe 3.5 out of 10. I just found it was really hard to get into. I found like the main character like really unlikable. I found like his humor, like elementary school boy type humor, that's like not my style. And I just didn't really like the first person past tense kind of telling a story that already happened, where the narrator kind of already knows the outcome. That's never kind of my favorite kind of books. And I think of like all the characters that we're introduced to, I think he was the one that I didn't want the point of view to be from. I thought there's like more interesting characters. But like that being said too, I thought a lot of the characters weren't as kind of fleshed out as I would have wanted them to be. So those are kind of
that's funny. That's funny.
Why is that funny?
Right here, my notes. Right here.
Yeah.
I have Zach is not going to like this book. He doesn't like. Oh, wait, hold on. It says Zach hates witty characters in first person. He's going to really hate this book. That was my exact note there. So,
yeah, definitely. I mean, it just reminds you of like that buddy of yours that like retells and exaggerates stories and makes them like, you know, look cooler. And they always have the one liners available. And yeah. It never really works for me.
I feel attacked right now, personally, from that last statement. But
we just complimented him on his witty one-liners in the intro.
Yeah, but you're not like potentially like rewriting your past and insert like witty elementary school one-liners.
Oh, you don't know my past, so no. Maybe I am. No, I think you made some good points there. I would have much rather had first person with like Galva or any of the other characters. I wasn't super interested in this main character. I actually kind of hoped he was going to die at some point in the book, to be honest.
So, but you knew he wouldn't because of the way he was speaking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely. So it's just kind of like, I don't know. Not my favorite point of view character for sure. But Chris, what'd you think?
I agree with a lot of what Zach is saying. My biggest criticism for this book is that it was never able to draw me in. There's just multiple times that I tried to kind of get into this book and I'd go through a few chapters and I just wouldn't care to want to pick it up again. It never hooked me like that. Another thing I would like to mention, I did listen to this book, and the narrator has an extremely heavy accent, which I think also kind of negatively contributed to my listening to this, because it felt like work to listen to this book because that accent was so heavy, and this world was so rich, and it felt like, I guess I can't remember if we got this in before we started recording, probably not. This felt like the eighth or ninth book in like the Cosmere, where there's all of these references to things that you could know about if you've read the other books or something, but there are no other books. So like somebody might criticize Tress of the Emerald Sea because, oh, I didn't really understand this, or I didn't really understand that, and the book didn't try to explain it to me. Well, you could find those answers from the Tress books, but you can't find the answers by reading other books in the Black Tongue Thief. So it just came off as kind of confusing for me. So I give it a 5 out of 10. I don't think I'm as down on it as Zach was, but not one of my favorite reads.
Yeah, so we got a 3 out of 10, a 5 out of 10. It's kind of aligned with probably our general ratings for every book that we read, I think, because I'm like a little bit higher than you guys are. I did not enjoy the first half of this book. Basically up until the Kraken fight scene, I really wasn't in on this book. And so after that, I thought it really picked up. I thought there's a lot of really interesting ideas. I don't read a lot of like hard fantasy, but I liked having like goblins and giants involved in this story. And I thought there's a lot of really interesting ideas that they didn't explore, or they did a little bit, and I think they will more in the future. But like the Daughter's War, the Goblin's War, I thought were all really like really cool concepts. So I think there's a lot that in like the magic systems, like the tattoos, the magickers, all that was like interesting and really fantastical. But overall, I had a tough time like reading multiple chapters in a row until I got to the last like third. And then I was like, okay, I got to figure out what happens at the end here. And so overall, I would give it like a 7, maybe like a 6.5, something around there. But I enjoyed reading it, but it did feel like a slog to get to the interesting parts. Especially because like I just didn't care about the main character, and that makes it really tough to like read the book. So All right, well, that's a repeat of what we've already recorded. Let's talk through some plot points that are new to us now. So we open up the story on there's like a robbery scene at the beginning. This is where we're introduced to Kinch. We don't have his name at first. He's with like a gang of bandits, some highway bandits, and they attack Galva on the streets. She turns out to be a badass and has a war corvid tattoo on her, which is basically like she can summon this giant attack bird, which had some real reminiscence from the rooks from that Fonda Lee short story. So she had this war corvid, and they all get destroyed. She seems to be a benevolent warrior because she lets some of them go free. Any other thoughts about this initial scene?
Yeah, I have a big thought about this scene, and it's the corvid. Because I couldn't think of anything other than COVID, basically every time they were talking about corvids. So that was really slightly funny. Corvid this, corvid that. I'm like, COVID?
This did come out in 2021. Do you think the author was predicting or was projecting COVID to corvid?
Oh, I wonder. Oh, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't really have much to add. I think this is a good opening scene for the story. You got to be introduced to the main character, and for better and for worse, kind of his humor and his attitude towards things. And you got to meet Galva. So I think it was a good tone setter of kind of like, okay, this is kind of what this book will be about. There'll be a lot of kind of like what the fuck moments. There'll be a lot of like banter and bloodshed and that kind of stuff. So good opening for what it was.
Yeah, and then we head right to the bar fight where we actually meet Galva. Kinch and Galva meet. We see that the black hand on his face means anyone can slap him and get a free drink. And then we see some of his like robbery prowess while he steals this silver ring from the guy that slapped him.
My main thing on this was, at this point in the book, I was super pumped to have a POV story about like a thief. You know, thieves are always kind of off characters. They're usually very small characters. They drive plot along, but you never really get that from their point of view. So I was like really excited to have kind of a morally ambiguous character. Were you guys excited about that as well? Or were you kind of like dreading having that be the POV character?
I wouldn't say I was dreading it. I wasn't dreading it. I thought it was, I didn't really think about it, to be honest. I wasn't thinking, a breath of fresh air, a thief, and I wasn't thinking the opposite of that either. It was just, this is my main character and I'm trying to figure out who he is and what his motivations are.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, Brandon, on it. I was kind of excited. I was a little nervous. I was like, ooh, I hope it isn't kind of like a Kaladin where it's like he's a slave and people look down on him because he's like did something bad, but nope, he was just like a like awesome guy. So I was kind of hoping it didn't lean into that direction of he's actually really righteous and he was, you know, he got all of his like, he became a thief because of desperation because he was like so noble and stuff. So I was really hoping I wouldn't go in that direction, but no, I was excited that it was going to be like a, hopefully like a thief.
Which he ultimately was, yeah. Just maybe in like a disgusting, like you said, kindergarten level humor way, but yeah. All right, and then we get Kinch talking to the Takers Guild. Even furthered my excitement because I was a big Skyrim fan and Thieving Guild was always like my favorite guild from Skyrim. And so I was like also super pumped about this. We learned a little bit about the structure of the Thieving Guild or the Takers Guild, I mean, which is that they have really weird names for the ranks. You can go from a thief to a scarecrow to a prank to a fetch to a fawn and ultimately end up a famine. And I was like, I don't want that title at all. Any of those titles at all.
So what is Kinch? Is he a thief?
I think he's whatever the bottom is. Cause he still has the hand. He's still paying off his debt. So I think you have to pay off your debt before you can become like a rank.
Okay. And then what about the assassin? Is she, the final?
The final rank is like there's only like a few of them. Family. And they're really old people. I believe she was she might have been a fetch or something like that. Might not have ever found that out.
Okay.
So all right, and then Kinch is sent to prison, I believe, because he was saving the cats. And then the kids, and they like beat the shit out of a couple kids that were killing cats. And then they sent him to prison because of that. But in the prison, and this is such like a point that I have later in this, is a lot of the foreshadowing in this book, like it seems like they're foreshadowing something bigger. And it just really never comes around again. And I thought this fiddle that he gets back in prison was going to be like super, super important. I thought this fiddle was going to be like the key to everything. And like but it really just like never comes back around again. It's just kind of like, yeah, he has his fiddle.
PTSD from Kingkiller Chronicles. You're just thinking about the musical instruments and how they need to be important. Or even that flute that Wit has in the Cosmere, where he's always talking about. He's like, Kaladin, lost my flute.
Usually if a character has a musical instrument and they call it out often, it's like meaningful in some way. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll come back. Weird. I mean, I think you mentioned it, Brandon, before like we recorded, but it's like he's planning on making this a trilogy now with a potential prequel. So that's what's been kind of hard reading this. It's kind of like, I feel like you can almost tell that at one point he just threw up his hands and was like, all right, this isn't going to be a standalone. I'm actually going to expand this world and like try to flesh it out in other books. So I almost wonder if maybe he was just like, I won't shoehorn that in at the end of this book. I'll like bring that up in book like two or three now.
Yeah, I have to imagine this guy just has like, like a room full of sticky notes and things that he wanted to do, and just like tried to fit as many as possible into this book. He was like, all right, yeah. He's like, fuck it, I'll do a second book then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a lot of good stuff here. If it's popular enough, people will read it, right?
Yeah. Well, can't blame him for that, because he's got to test the waters. So so Kinch also meets a famine, maybe, in the prison, who like helps him escape. He's like, this is our prison, basically. Like, you can just fucking leave. He gets out of there. The group all meets together. They head to Dead Legs Tower. Now, this is where the book really really goes off the rails when you meet Dead Legs. When you're walking up, you've heard that magic is a thing. You've heard that Kinch has some magic. You know magickers exist. The magickers are batshit insane. What the fuck was this whole section was insanity?
Yeah, I mean, and this is not to belabor my point too much, but this is kind of what I'm talking about. It's like, I didn't know what was real, what was fake, what was anything. You know what I mean? You go from this fight scene, and then he's in prison, and then he's still hanging out with these people, even though they just let him out of prison randomly. And then there's weird thing with the fiddle, and then you go to this. You go to this tower and you're just like, what's happening right now? What are we doing?
I had to read the paragraph where she puts on new legs like 60 times, because I was like, what the fuck is actually happening here? Does she have legs? Are these magical? What is going on? Nope, she just needs legs, so she takes other people's.
Yeah, I agree. This book, like, it'll be super grounded for a while, and then all of a sudden it'll be like some random like weird magic shit happens for like five paragraphs, and then back to being like super grounded and like normal and funny. And it's like, wait, what? Like, like, go back. Like, what happened in that chapter again? Like, yeah.
And I was very confused. The author starts to set up rules for his magic, but then he's also just like, oh, here's these magickers that basically can just do fucking whatever they want. And you're like, okay, so there's no rules for the magic, or is there rules for the magic? I don't get it.
Yeah.
Seemingly you can, like, you're not just born with strong magic. Like, you can learn the magic like Noragal does, which we find out maybe she did. I don't know. It's just like, I would like to know, like, what is the system that we're playing in here? What are the rules of the game that we're playing? So.
I agree.
All right. And then they just kind of throw in this story about the hunt for the Hornhead Mixling.
Yeah.
That's just a chapter, and then really,
yeah.
I think this was just to introduce Mixlings, so that the next time when we see the other insane magicker, that we kind of have an idea of what the fuck he's doing. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
this kind of gets to your Iliad or Odyssey point that you made, where it's just kind of like adventure things happen, and then at some point there's just going to be a chapter about dealing with this fun little adventure real quick, and then get back on pace.
Mm-hmm. It's like a bad D&D campaign.
Hey, that's actually, I wouldn't be surprised if that's how this book like was birthed. Like, the idea for this book was just like a weird D&D campaign. That's,
I thought that a really lot good of times.
I'm like,
this,
you're right.
Yeah. This like kind of reeks of like someone's like fanfic of like a campaign that they did.
Yeah.
Interesting. Huh. I thought like, once again, like what I was talking about with my rating, though, I thought like the idea of a mixling was a really interesting idea. But it really, once again, we see several of them throughout the story. Never important. Never once is a mixling like an important thing to the story. So. Yeah. All right. So they leave that hunt. I think we learn those people were from Espanthia, I think. So we learned like a little bit more about Galva's hometown, or home country, too. And then we go back to Kinch goes back to where he's sleeping, or the inn that he's staying at, and the cat follows him home, Bully Boy, which he names Bully Boy. And I thought this was just adorable. I was so pumped. I was like, oh my God, we get a sweet little baby angel, and this is going to follow Kinch around. Like, that's going to be adorable this entire time.
Yeah, we love an animal companion.
Always, like almost always, without fail. And then it turns out it's just an assassin inside of Bully Boy. She comes out, they have a little scuffle. She's like, I gotta tell you the real reason why this is, why the guild sent you on this trip. You gotta watch her, or Galva's trying to put a witch on the throne of Oystrom.
Okay.
I can't remember if it's of Oystrom or if it's of... No, it's of the Hrava. Not much more to say there. I was just disappointed that the assassin was the cat. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that. This is when I started to get interested in the book of like, okay, we're starting to see like what the plot, the actual plot of this book is going to be. And it's not just some cat following him around.
Hey, man, give me the cat. Bully boy for life. I guess it seems like the last few books, maybe it's just what we're reading, but I've just been about people that need to start at point A and get to point B. And that's like essentially the story. Things happen along the way. It's interesting. I'm getting a bit sick of this. This like, just we need to get to that town, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. What are you guys' feelings about like stories like that?
I agree. I think it's like a, well, I guess, I don't know. That's always been a story, like a fantasy trope. I mean, back to Lord of the Rings, you know? Mm-hmm. But I do think it's like prevalent today. I think a lot of times like video games have to do with that, you know? And like some of these card games or like D&D, it's very much that way. And even like, even like TV shows today, like think of like the Star Wars shows or like even the new like Star Wars movies, it's very much we have to get this one thing to go to this planet to go to this planet. It just seems like the very popular thing, and I wonder if it was like the video games that kind of sprung it back lately. But I think, I don't know, like I said, it's probably always been a thing for fantasy.
Well, I
mean, Lord of the Rings is a great example. They have to get to Mordor to dispose of the ring. Mm-hmm. But that's, they at least had like a reason like why they were doing that. Like, we have this thing, it has to get there. That's what we're doing. This is just like a guy was told by some people that he needs to go to this place, and so he's gonna go to that place.
I just didn't work for me. I think it's a well-worn fantasy trope. I agree. I think that we could use some fresh ideas in the genre.
Go ahead. Oh, like, not to get back to like my anti first person like rant, but I do think that's like the problem with like a first person story. Like that, I had like problem with this and with Red Rising, where it's like, if you want to see parts of the world and kind of explore the backgrounds of the story, and you only have like one point of view character, then they're going to have to go like on a multi-state quest in order to explore those cultures. Versus if you have like a Game of Thrones or even like a Stormlight, you can switch POVs and that's how you get the world building, and you don't have to take your character all around the globe and to travel, you know, north to south, to east to west to kind of see the trolls and the giants and the krakens. It's like, no, you could just hop between a couple different characters. Like, this book really reminds me of the Shadow of the Gods kind of trilogy, but that was cool because you had like three different POVs, so it was like one person who had to meet all those like gods and do all that stuff. It's kind of, they all had their own story. So I think that's kind of too, it's, we're in this kind of phase of first person storytelling is also becoming big, and if you want to do that, then you do have to drag that character like across the continent in order to explore your world.
It wouldn't be a Knights of the Hardcover if Zach didn't complain about a first person story. So I'm glad we got that covered.
Hey, that can only be me.
Yeah.
I think it's a good point. And maybe it's just me because like I'm also reading through Wheel of Time still right now. And that is the entire book. It's just every book. Yeah, is just
that's
like,
all, that's just all, going from place to place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the whole point of the book, which I think they do it in a good way in that, because they actually have real things they're trying to accomplish. But all right, let's move along here. We got Kinch gets recants his backstory of why he joined the Taker's Guild. Ultimately, he didn't believe in the Goblin War. He was about to get drafted for it because he pissed off somebody and they were going to draft him into the Goblin War. And he's like, fuck that. I can just go to the Taker's Guild and not have to deal with that. He doesn't think anyone knows about this. They go to a boat to take them to where they needed to go. And one of the guys on the boat knows about his backstory, which is why we get it.
Malk was the last kind of person that he like offended before he went off to the Taker's Guild. So I thought this was interesting. Yeah. This was the first real piece of like character development. Like this was good. This was a really good part of the book. And I love a backstory. And I think this like really explained Kinch why he is the way he is.
Yeah, I agree. I like this part. I like that was the reason that he joined the guild and became a thief. And it was good that this Malk guy, who might be your stereotypical like grunt who's mad at the main character and big guy want to fight main character, you know, he like had a real reason, I think. So I did like this part as well.
Mm-hmm. Zach, anything else to put on there?
No, I guess somebody say like on the next point, but I did like this like character development. Oh, that was an interesting backstory, something that you wouldn't expect from him.
Yeah, it definitely like the whole thing had been goofy up to this point, and then you get like a point of like serious like self-contemplation, which was good. We needed that. So they join the boat. The boat's a whale hunting boat. They are told that they have to help out with the whale hunt. They are all on the boat. They help bring a whale on board, which ultimately, oh wait, that's later. So anything to add there? Zach, you said a point on that one, or should we just keep going?
I think of like the duel. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Malk confronts Kinch about his backstory. They've had like some butting heads the entire time. And finally, Malk challenges Kinch to a duel, which he basically is not allowed to decline, or he's able to have someone fight for him, but he wants to prove that to Malk that he is more than a deserter. So, Zach, what do you got for us?
I guess for me, like, I found this part like super duper boring. I was like, we're not going to kill off the guy who knows his secret, like in the very first chapter he's introduced. And again, since this is like a first person point of view story, there's still like half the book left, so our guy isn't gonna die, so something's gonna happen to stop this fight. So I was just like, the whole time I'm like, I was never worried for either of them, because I was like, something's gonna happen to like interrupt this. So I don't know, I wasn't crazy about it. So yeah, I mean, I'm glad I guess they had like an altercation, but I was not on the edge of my seat during this part. I thought it was pretty obvious what was going to happen.
The part that I did like about this was, it was interesting seeing Kinch's like fighting skill, like his scrappy fighting ability. And like, he is a skilled person. Like, he's not just like a guy that's like can steal things. He has like a very broad set of skills that are useful in situations like this. So I thought that was interesting. But yeah, overall, most of the political dynamics on the boat, I was just kind of like, ugh, I don't care.
I liked where Galva, when this duel was starting to happen, Galva was basically like, nope, I beat you to it. I'm gonna challenge you to a duel for pissing me off, actually. So now we're gonna duel each other instead. I did like that part. I was very confused about who got poisoned and when, and then our main character just started fighting Malk, and I'm like, okay, wait, what happened to that? But I liked when she kind of like tried to protect him there for a little bit.
Galva's the best character of the story. There's just, in my mind, there's no even contest on that. But
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then we get the Kraken fight. The Kraken, giant squid, comes and like starts attacking the boat. Just this whole thing was, I thought, in general, I don't like action scenes in books like this, but I thought the action here was fun, is interesting. It was quick. They showed you what you needed to show, and was fucking terrifying. Like, it would be so scary to be on a boat with a Kraken coming at you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Do we have anything more to go there, or should we just keep pounding along here?
Yeah, I don't have anything to add.
Okay, so then the Kraken ultimately destroys the boat. They get castawayed on a deserted island. What did you guys think of this scene? This is like a pretty long part of them being castaways. Did you enjoy this? What did you think?
No thought on it. I did not really care for this part. I found it pretty boring.
Yeah, Chris? I'm kind of on Zach's side there. I almost don't even remember this at all. It didn't even make much of a mark on mark for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Did it hit for you?
Yeah. This is a part I wanted to talk about because I feel like we just came off a really, really high of the Kraken fight, and then we just are stranded on an island, and it's just like there's nothing that kills a story more to me. I just watched Pirates of the Caribbean recently, and that's like the only time where people deserted on a stranded island was like interesting to me. Every time this happens, I'm like, why the fuck are we doing this? Like, I get that happened and it does happen to people, but don't show me it. I don't give a fuck about them and what they're doing on this deserted island. Just get me to where they need to be.
Yeah, that's yes.
And then the goblins show up. I liked this part though. This is the part of the deserted island I liked a lot. The goblins were really interesting because we'd heard so much about them up to this point. Do you guys like we read the Goblin Emperor, and so we have some experience reading goblins. Do you guys like goblins in a story?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question, especially since when reading the Goblin Emperor, I never really thought of the main character of that book to be like some sort of just like scary looking goblin or anything like that. But I do think that this book did a pretty good job of being like, what's a goblin? Why are they so scary? But he also kind of fleshed them out to the point where they are their own thing. You know, they're not just this scary other. They are like beings themselves, maybe just understood. So I kind of liked that we got some of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with what Chris said. So I always like kind of like a goblin added to the story, because you do feel like something's going to pop into your head when you hear the word goblin. And it was kind of cool how he kind of added to it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think a lot of times you hear goblin and you're like, okay, it's just like a fucking animal basically. But this was just like the contrast or the comparison between them and the quote unquote kind was very interesting. Because they were just exactly the same. Basically, they had archers, they had infantrymen, they had magickers, they had like everything that the normal armies use. Plus, they have like, oh my gosh, it reminded me of like the Parshendi in Cosmere, of like they had like, you know, the Parshendi have like this carapace that they have on their bodies that protects them, but these guys have hooked hands that they use as weapons, and they're just scared of birds, and like just like having normal fears and also normal like advantages just made them a lot more, I don't want to say the word relatable, but like kind of relatable.
Yeah.
All right, so they get on the goblin boat. Their goblins are preparing a feast. They're going to eat the people because that's what they do. The assassin saves them. That was pretty surprising to me, honestly. I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting them to be saved by the assassin at any point. I just thought this was an interesting part and disgusting listening to the all of their reactions to the guy being eaten was awful.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add on the part either.
All right, we'll keep going. So they're rescued by the Middle Sea boat. What did you think of this interaction with the people from Middle Sea?
Honestly, not much.
I don't even know. I don't even know who the people from the Middle Sea are. Like, that's how. Yeah, I don't want to keep.
Like I do like remember. It's just like I just feel like a lot of stuff was just kind of like happening quick with like the goblin fight, the feast stuff, and then this boat rescue scene, and then there was like, not to get ahead, but like the marriage and the tattoo. Just this is a part where it was almost like a shitty
avalanche. Like a fever dream.
Yeah, it was like a lot of stuff was just like going on, bang, bang, bang.
I would have liked to see one for them to have talked about Middle Sea ever previously to this. They're just kind of like, oh, the people from Middle Sea exist. And you're like, yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then I did think it was interesting, the negotiation between the dockmaster and the crew that was deserted. I liked hearing that they're like, oh, why don't we just sell the boat? And these people are like, are you guys fucking stupid? Like, are you dumb? If you sell that, you're going to start an entire war with the goblins. Like, just take our money and get the fuck out of here. And then Galva obviously revealing that she was royalty, and then she got like a shit ton of money from that was, I liked all of it. They just kept introducing things. They're like, oh yeah, people from Middlesea. And you're like, what is that?
Well, I never remember.
It was so anticlimactic for me when Galva was like, and I'm a princess. I was like, okay. I was like, who fucking cares? Who are you? Okay, great. Let's go.
that's true. Definitely does not matter.
I remember being annoyed during this whole part because it was kind of like, how are they going to get out of this mess? And it's like, oh, here's a ship. But then also, she's actually a princess. So like, that's how we're going to get out of this. I felt like, you know, did the writer like couldn't think of how to get out of this? Or was this always kind of planned? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It didn't fully work for me, the rescue.
Yeah. But you know what did work for me is when Norgal and Kinch fell in love.
Oh, God. You're kidding.
Fell in lust, I would say.
You're kidding me.
They just wanted to get it on. You know what I mean?
That was like the worst part of this book.
This came so fucking out of nowhere.
Yeah, it did.
Like, what, why did they have to get married? Fuck? For a month.
I remember thinking, I was like, why is he marrying this princess? And then I was like, oh wait, no, he's not. It's not the princess, it's this witch. But it's not the witch that wants to kill him, it's a different witch.
Witch, she's the one that has like a fox tail, right?
Does she have a foxtail?
Or a wolf. It was like, oh, he had
Does she?
I thought there was something about how she had a wolf tail at all times, so they kind of had to play around that when they were doing their marital duties.
Oh my God. I might have just skipped right over that. What the hell is this book?
Yeah, I mean, I hope I didn't imagine that part of it. But I thought there's something about
little, like a little tail. Fan fiction from Zach over there. He's like, oh, I wish he had a wolf tail.
Yeah, I did kind of black out during this part.
Yeah, they got married for a month because they're like testing out a marriage basically, and it was just like, I don't know, man, I don't know about this whole thing. Wait, and then Kinch finds out later that this was like a fucking old witch with no legs that had like recreated herself to be her.
Yeah, she's like a clone.
She's a clone. That would have been nice. That feels like rape to me. Like, I don't want to like throw out, you know, the R word here, but like, he has no idea who's hooking up with right now. If a grandma disguises herself as a young lady and then hooks up with a guy, I feel like that's rape. I don't know.
Well, it's not disguising. It's just a full-on clone, isn't it?
Is it? I couldn't tell if it was a clone or if it was just her. Like,
I think it's a magic clone.
Oh my God.
That's just how stays alive or whatever. Like, you know, Foundation? Like Foundation, the books.
Oh, yeah.
Think about like those kings, right? Those emperors that there's like an old, there's like a kid version and a middle version and an old version all the time. And then they just keep decanting new clones every 20 years or so. That's kind of how
Have you read those books or are you watching the show?
I'm watching the show. I heard it was really good. I've liked it so far.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't checked out the show yet, but I love those books. So
yeah, I heard season two of the show is like the best thing on TV right now. That's what they say.
Oh shit. I watched one episode and got bored to all hell, so I just stopped. Yeah. But
yeah.
I'll check it out. All right. So now this pod is going to turn into a foundation. Everyone sit down and listen to my thoughts.
I found the wolf tail section in the book. It wasn't her, it was her sister. The sister had a wolf tail. Solgra?
Who's Solgra?
It just said she was the one that had a wolf's tail that she would try to hide when people were intimate with her. And so the first thing that Nolgrel did was strip off and show her, or showed me her backside, which is a very pleasing thing to look on, and would have been even so if it bore a wolf's tail, which it didn't.
Man,
and it got kind of graphic and it was gross.
Wow.
Those lines, like, it was pleasing to look at. It's such like a weird neckbeard way of putting that. Like, well, oh.
This, yeah, like, he's like, I wish there was a tail there too. I know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to read all of it, but during the deed, it said her voice was so husky and fertile. It's like, oh, what does that even?
Oh, my.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
so my apologies for spreading some furry rumors about him, but he seemed like he would have been into it if she had a tail.
Yeah. It seems like he was in for whatever. So,
yeah.
Okay. Enough of that weird shit. All right. We're moving on. So then they, Kinch kind of like reveals to Noragal that Spezza is in the cat and is kind of holding them hostage, essentially. So Noragal makes a tattoo of Bully Boy on Kinch to like kind of contain her, keep her as prisoner. Then she starts infiltrating her minds. Got a lot of Wheel of Time. What's her name? The Forsaken.
Yeah.
Her name's Serene in the book.
But yeah. Oh my God. Lanfear.
Lanfear. There you go. Yeah. Got some real Lanfear stuff here.
One more once Gideon. Again,
some. Oh yeah. There you go. Wait, what? What'd you say?
How far are you in the books?
Not as far as you. All right. Doesn't matter. we'll keep moving on here. I just thought this was an interesting, once again, an interesting idea that just kind of went unexplored. They're like, oh, she can get into your dreams. And then it kind of happens, but they never, it never really like happens.
Yeah.
I feel disappointed by that.
Yeah. I did kind of like this little wrinkle here. When they trapped the assassin, obviously you knew it wasn't going to stick, but, yeah, I like this.
Yeah.
Zach, any thoughts here?
No, I agree. I think it's a really cool premise. It did. I was just kind of confused because you're introducing this type of magic so late into the book. So I was kind of confused of like, wait, that's how like tattooing like works and you can trap people this way. So I was like a little confused of just the timing of the reveal, but I think it's a really cool idea that I hope gets explored more.
All right. Yeah, I think this is, will come back around. I think this like infiltrating dreams and infiltrating minds via the tattoos is going to be important later. So, all right, now on to a part that I thought was very interesting. So they get to the city of Gravitsa. And this is a city that's ruled by the goblins, but the kind are allowed to live there. But they tattoo their hand black to show they're like friend of the goblin. So I thought this like this had some real Lord of the Rings vibes to me of people that kind of dedicated their lives to the orcs because they're like, well, we're all fucked. So why don't we just work with them? And so they basically like voluntarily become slaves of the orcs or of the goblins. I thought this idea was really interesting. I wish we could have stayed in this city for a lot longer. I wish that we could have learned more about how the city works. This to me was like, I really liked this part and the idea of that, which was like three sentences total of the book, but
yeah, that's good. I don't have a lot to add on this one.
Same. What about the pulling game over the fence posts that ultimately kills Malk? What are your thoughts on this game?
My thoughts are, I don't even know what you're talking about, to be honest with you. The pulling game.
I was sad that Malk died because I thought that there would have been more to him in the main character's relationship where that would be explored more. So I was just kind of bummed that we lost Malk, but also Malk is such a gross name. So I'm kind of glad that I never have to say Malk again. I don't know. this whole part, I was just so I couldn't like grasp onto anything. This whole section of the book, because things are happening so quick. I'm like, wait, what happened? Like, what are the rules to this polling game? Where, what city were you in? Like, what are the customs? Yeah, so I it really kind of like lost me this whole section, and his death didn't hit for me at all, or how he died. How about you, Brandon? What did you think of it?
Yeah, I agree with you, Zach. It's just I wanted Malk to stick around because I thought this was kind of like a redemption, not redemption story, but like enemies turned friends story. I thought that was going to be interesting. Ultimately, it was just a weird thing to introduce a cultural thing of the goblins and like the goblin kind interaction within the city. And it was just like, I don't know. Felt like a 5-year-old came up with this. So I just, this scene fell very flat for me.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it so like intense and like, whoa, what's going to happen? It's like, I don't fucking care. You either pull him across or pull him across and kill him. Whatever. Fucking let's go. Let's move on here.
Yeah. Big disconnect of how intense it was written and how kind of lame the game was.
Yeah. It was lame. It was lame. That's a good way of putting it.
And this next part, we have written in our notes here, Brandon. Fulvir Castle, weird god mixling, might be Kinch's dad. Like,
yeah.
Before we even get into it, like, I was in a blender around this. When the guy was like, "Hey, I'm your dad," I honestly thought he said, "Hey, you're my dad." That's what I thought he was saying when I read it. And then later on, there's like, I wonder if he really is my dad. And I'm like, wait, what? I thought you were his maybe dad. I was like beyond confused. I couldn't tell you a thing about what happened here.
Yeah, they did not explain this very well. All of this, everything that happened at Fulvir's Castle felt like out of a nightmare. let's hit these one at a time here. All right, first and foremost, we had the weird god mixlings. So Kinch goes to explore the castle. He comes upon like a bunch of experiments, basically, of a guy taking off like fox heads and putting them on human bodies and being like, look, it's a god. What the fuck? Yeah. What the fuck was this?
The only explanation I have is the author is like a whore author, and this is his first time like really diving into fantasy, so I'm sure just him trying to like meld those two together and like, how can I put my horror spin on a fantasy book, and this is kind of the attempt that he did.
But okay, so my question is like, was it supposed to tell us something about Fulvir? Was it supposed to show us something about the gods? Was it supposed to show us Kinch's feelings about the gods? Like, what was the purpose of this?
It's to make you say what the fuck. I think that's ultimately the purpose. I couldn't tell you what the actual purpose was story-wise.
Mission accomplished. They did it. And then like as they're leaving, the fucking weird god mixings are just like waving goodbye, being like, bye guys. I was like, what?
I hope you find your dad.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how I felt about that part. And then the second part of this is Fulvir's constantly being like, I fucked your mom, could be your dad. And it was just like, is he your...
Who's Fulvir?
The magicker that owned the castle that they're at.
And why did they go to this castle?
To fix the tattoo of the war corvid.
Because they needed a new one. Okay.
She only had two. She needed to get the second one fixed. Yeah.
It's like a MacGuffin.
Okay.
I don't know. It's just everything that happened in this castle, I was like, huh?
Yeah. I don't think that's his dad. I think it's supposed to like get us to start thinking about like, oh yeah, who is his dad? And then there'll be like another reveal later on about his parents. I think it's just to kind of set up the fact that maybe his parents aren't exactly who we seem they are. There's more to that story. So I just kind of took it as foreshadowing of like an actual reveal down the road.
Do you think that his parents are going to be significant in some way, and that's why he has like natural magic or luck or whatever you want to call it?
100%. There has to be a reason why he got it. like all the him being able to read all the languages and his luck and all that. There has to be something more.
Well, I thought this was supposed to be a standalone book.
I think so, but again, I think he just, when he was writing it all, he got all these ideas, and then he was just like, okay, I'm gonna, like, I feel like at that cracking point, that's when he was like, all right, I'm gonna, like, unleash all my ideas and just embrace a three-book structure and started to throw everything in this book, because he knew he had two other books to actually, you know, get into the lore and do a prequel and all that.
I don't know. Maybe. At this point, it just seemed like a bunch of random shit was happening to me. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I really like
the Towers game.
Oh, not quite yet. We're not quite there yet. We got to get to the Towers game first. I really liked everything that happens from here out to the end of the book. Harava. They get to Harava. That's ultimately their goal. They're trying to get the witch to be the queen of the Harava. This is the city that was overrun by giants. They get there. It's still overrun by giants. Kinch goes in there. He's running away from giants. They have like humans on leashes that they're chasing after him. There's wild packs of children, boys attacking people. I don't know. All of this was awesome. I really, really liked this. I loved the idea of this. I wish we could have gotten here faster and spent more time in Harava, because this was like exciting to me. This was weird and new and had purpose to drive forward the story. What did you guys think of these fucking pestering kids, first and foremost?
I don't know. Not much. It was just weird, you know? Just another thing. I'm sorry, you keep asking me what I think about these things. I feel bad, like I don't have anything to say.
I'm starting to think that Chris didn't read the book.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm kind of like in the middle of you guys, like on this one here, where so much stuff is happening here. I thought the weird, like, fucked up kids, I thought that was like creepy and probably like annoying if you are the main character trying to get through this city and outrun them. But I so much is being thrown at you, is I had a hard time with just like focusing on one of these things, but they definitely like creeped me out, I think, more than anything else was supposed to try to creep me out.
All right, we'll get to the good part here then, what Chris really wants to talk about. So Kinch goes underground, jumps in the sewer, comes across basically an entire underground city. There's a whole market, there's an economy, there's, you know, an upper class, lower class within this underground city. Runs into the guy that says he knows something about where the queen is. He's like, you gotta beat me in a towers game. Essentially, I win the towers game, I get to have sex with you. You win the towers game, I'll tell you everything you need to know. And so they play the towers game. It's
like poker. Seemed like
cocaine.
Poker.
Oh, I thought you said coke. No, it's the game of towers seemed interesting. They play it. It's a card game. You're basically trying to. It's risk mixed with poker, basically. Then we learn that, like, I don't even know. I gotta look at my notes in this, because this was disorienting. You guys, like,
yeah, honestly, I don't really. It's all very disorienting at this point. I remember thinking, like, who is this guy and why does he why does he want to have sex with the main character here? Why are we trying to get this information from this guy? Why are you stuck in this game? He seemed to think it was like very, very life or death, like this game, you know, and he was very nervous about it. So.
Well, ultimately, if he lost, he was going to die, correct? Like, they're going to fuck him and then kill him? Is that what's going on here?
So it seemed like he could have died in either case. If he won by too much, they were going to kill him. And if if he lost, then he was going to essentially get like raped, and then they'd probably kill him after that too. And so he wasn't able to just win. He had to win in the right way that they didn't like get offended too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Kinch is just trying to figure out what happened to the queen. These guys have an economy based off of this guy has like fucked all of the people that are hanging out here. And he's like, listen, we'll play a game of towers. You win. I'll tell you anything you want to know. I win. I get to fuck you in the butt. And then like, that's like the whole game that they're playing. There's no death involved. There's no anything. Oh my God. The stakes are sex or information.
Okay.
But Kinch is trying not to piss him off too much by winning too quick with his luck. Because if he does that, then they're going to kill him because he's too lucky. And this is a problem he's experienced in the past where he's too good at towers and people kill him or try to kill him. And so he wins the towers game. The guy takes him back he loses the tower game. The guy takes him to the back room. He's like, listen, we took the queen. We gave him to the guild. I'm going to have sex with you anyways. And then he's like, I don't want to have sex. They have to make a bunch of noises. They have to act like they're fucking, but he just tells them the information. Then he leaves. And then Kinch, as the first person narrator, says that they might have had sex. The whole thing was just so fucking weird. It was weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all.
I don't have a lot to add there.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're just going to skip past that shit. I've spent too much time thinking about this already.
Yeah, you did.
He gets the info he wants. I had to put the book down at this point because I was like, what am I doing? Why am I reading this book? All right. Anyway, so he gets the information that they took the queen. The guild came, took him through this passageway to this house. Then Kinch goes and explores this house, finds the underground tunnels. Has to go past a bunch of booby traps, comes out on this big hill, sees that there's like giants everywhere, gets the crew back together. They have to take on the giants to get past them to get to this cave. They fight the giants. We didn't even talk about this with Fulvir because God damn, this is the weirdest book I've ever read. Fulvir had given them as a gift, a parting gift, like three musicians that made no sense. He's like, take these musicians with you or you're gonna die. They take him with them. They're fighting these fucking giants. They're losing. The musicians play a song, slows down the giants. They beat the giants. Musicians turn into rats.
Yes, of course. What else?
Thoughts on that?
What else could you have expected to happen in this situation? Of course.
Yeah, it's a shitty D&D campaign. It's like, oh, remember those mouses you won from like 5 weeks ago? Hey, what if you like use them to do this? Yeah, I already said like this is like a 2-star book for me at this point, and I was like so checked out during this. I'm like, sure, of course, the musicians are there to help. Oh yeah, of course they turn to rats. Yep.
You know what this book is? This is basically just Matt's storyline from Wheel of Time, just not done very well.
With the luck and the death. Yeah, it definitely
is. And even marrying like this dangerous, powerful woman who's like almost some sort of a queen in her own right with the magic, you know?
I'm not to that point in the books, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, Chris, you keep on spoiling the books for...
I don't care.
I don't even think about it.
It's a 15 book series. I'm probably never going to finish it. But when Fulvir gave him the musicians, obviously you knew that something cool was going to happen. You're like, fuck, these are going to be important. I was expecting something cool to happen. This was not that.
They turned into the three blind mice and ran away.
Okay, I take back my rating earlier. I said 7. I'm giving this a 6. Let's just put that there. All right. Okay.
You keep going through the plot points and being like, wait, what?
Yeah.
This doesn't make any sense.
I enjoyed this book when I read it, but now like talking about it, I'm like, did I enjoy this book at all? Fuck.
Again, it's like D&D. it's like, I'm sure you had fun playing it, but like when you retell the story of what you did, it's like, okay.
No, you don't.
Yeah, like there were some fun scenes, but it was just like, you're just in there. You're just in these scenes now. And it's just, you're just okay. Okay. Well, now I'm on a boat with a Kraken. Oh, well, now I'm playing a game of poker so I don't get R worded, or now this weird creepy scientist is telling me he might be my dad.
Oh my God. We have to go back a second. You just reminded me of something else. Kinch in the guild, they raped everyone in the guild. But just what? To prepare. Yeah. He talked about this. They prepared them in case they ever have to get raped. So they raped them while they're in like training. Oh my God. I'm so. All right. Oh, let's get through the rest of this.
Let's get to this cave scene. The cave scene was pretty interesting. I did like when they got to the giant, the first thing that Kinch thought, he was like, well, there's no way the giant could have got in here. Like, it just like literally can't fit. So that was a nice, like quick, the foreshadowing was resolved pretty quickly there. But I did think that was interesting that they would hit all the horses on this giant's body and then shrunk it down and to hide it away. I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah, it was very interesting. As a person that loves horses too, I was like, yes, the horses are back, baby. Let's go. And then we find out that Miria and Glava are also like past lovers, which was an interesting little twist to throw in there. That's like her true reason for wanting to save her. We learn about the murder alphabet, which kills you when you read it.
Yep, that was good.
And then finally, like, Kinch's cipher ability comes back to use, so he's able to read the book without like dying. Then Sesta attacks as an assassin, kills all of them. They reverse time. They fight her again. Noragal becomes Deadlegs.
Whew. Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna need some help here at the end, because in a book full of stuff that confused me, this probably confused me the most. There was a lot of stuff going on in the scene with Sesta. They kill Sesta, and then they almost killed Sesta, and then Sesta reverses time, and they do it all over again. And then at one point, I'm just reading this in my fever dream state, and the main character slits Norgal's throat. And I was like, what? What's going on? And I was like, is she dead? What's going on? And then they win. And then he walks away into the sunset, and he's like, man, it's too bad that Norgal didn't make it. So I'm like, what the fuck? Like, what happened there?
I can't tell you.
You nailed it.
I missed something.
Okay. I'm just going to read through my notes here, because this part I could not decipher. So the book was alive. We skipped over that. Whatever. Kinch slits Norgal's throat to summon Deadlegs. So it was like a blood sacrifice to summon Deadlegs. So they had to kill Norgal. One, I don't know how he knew to do that, but he just instinctually knew to slit her throat.
And she was fully alive at the time.
Yes.
Okay.
And then Deadlegs comes back. That's all I got.
Deadlegs kills Sesta.
Deadleg wipes the tattoos off of Sesta. She clears all her tattoos, which I was like, that seems like a very strong piece of magic right there.
That should be the first thing you teach your clone. Like, the second you clone your clone, you should be like, here's how you get rid of all of your enemy's tattoos in one fell swoop. It's the first thing you gotta fucking know.
Seems important. Seems quite the oversight. Yeah, and then Norgal just disappears.
Yeah, just gone. And they're like, yeah, maybe she'll be back someday. It's like, okay. I did like that at least he didn't like ride off into the sunset with the girl, you know? At least there wasn't that.
Okay, but there's a line in the book that said, like, Deadlegs and Norgal were the same person, but from different times.
Mm.
So I don't know is that a clone? Is she a time travel? Like, I just...
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know, man. I had a really tough time with it. I feel like it was not explained.
All right. Well, that's our thoughts of the book. We're just going to skip over it. Happy ending.
Yeah. Semi happy ending.
And then they take the Shadows book. They read it. They're going to like explore how the Takers Guild got so much power.
Yeah. They're going to take down the man.
Yeah.
Take down the institutions.
All right. Let's move along here. Quotes. We're going to skip over this. I had a lot of quotes. It's just the jokes from Kinch that I thought were really cringy. I had a bunch of those, but we don't need to go over those. They were what they were. I have a lot of lore and history in here. We definitely don't need to go over all of this, but one thing I did want to go over was I thought the Daughters' War was really cool. So the Goblins' War happens. So many men die to win this war that they lead to the Daughters' War with all of the daughters, the women of the world have to like take up arms, learn to fight. They essentially are the only ones that can save the world, and they end up doing it with the help of the kind. Or sorry, with the help of the War Corvids, which were created by these Magickers. I just thought this was the coolest part of the story. This was the one part I took that I was like, fuck, that sounds cool. And it's something that you like, we've never seen, or as far as my fantasy knowledge has gone, I've never really seen that in a book before of like that idea. And I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a good idea.
And if he does, so the prequel that he's putting out is supposed to be about the Daughters' War. I will read the shit out of that. Like, that sounds so interesting.
So you have a note here that says led to the kind. Well, how did the Daughters' War lead to the kind?
So kind comes from mankind. And because so many of the men had died in the world, they started changing words that had like man in them. And so mankind didn't really apply because like 5% of the population was mankind. And so they started just calling them kind because the women were in charge. So they could do what they wanted to. And I just thought that was also an interesting little point there.
Gotcha.
Anything you guys want to talk about with the magic system? Anything that particularly was interesting to you?
I thought the tattoos were interesting. You know, it's kind of a fun idea. You tattoo something on you and then you can use it by touching it. I think that's like, as far as magic systems go, I think it's just a solid foundation for a magic system there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Zach, do you have anything?
Nope, I was agreeing with Chris.
All right. I thought the cipher aspect was also interesting and is going to become really prevalent, I think, in future books. Just the fact that he can read any language or understand any language automatically seems really powerful. It's really dangerous. And he has to come from, like, back to Zach's point earlier, like a significant line of people, like a significant ancestry to get that ability. So... and then the fact that we learned that like goblins use magic too, I just thought that was also interesting. So,
yeah, it reminded me of a lot of Harry Potter, where the goblins have their own magic that's just as powerful but different. So don't fuck with them.
Yeah, they use it in a different way, which is interesting. And then the last part was just the gods seemed at the beginning to be really important, turned out to like basically mean nothing. Gods are just what you believe in.
Yeah.
So, okay. I feel like we have talked about this about as much as we should talk about this.
Yeah.
Are you guys, just to end things off here, are you excited about reading a prequel or a sequel of this book?
No. Like, I'm not interested in either of them. I think the most... you could sell me on is like playing a video game based off this world or doing some sort of like D&D campaign or a card game, like that kind of stuff. But yeah. I have no desire to like read about this world again.
Yeah. You could turn this into a pretty solid D&D campaign. You know, honestly, you could make it pretty good. But I don't think I'll be reading any prequels or sequels. I don't have any hate for this author or any of his future possible success. but I just don't have, I don't think I have a lot of interest to dive back into this world.
I will read a prequel. I will not read a sequel. That's if his prequel is planned to be the Daughters' War, I will read that. That sounds interesting. I'd love to like know how like the War Corvids came to be and like all of that, but I didn't really enjoy the writing style a lot either. I guess we didn't touch on that, but it was blah to me. Would you watch a movie of this?
Yeah, I would. I'd watch a movie of this.
I think.
I don't know.
Oh, go ahead, Zach.
I mean, I feel like they kind of did right with the D&D movie that came out. That is not supposed to be kind of like this, or it's supposed to be like funny adventure. I don't know. Yeah. I haven't seen that yet, but no. I mean, I don't have a desire to see a movie of it. I mean, maybe I would just so I could see if they could see like what the hell was actually going on in this story. And maybe they could like clean it up a bit, but I don't have a desire to watch it fold out.
What about you?
I would watch a movie if the writer was not the author. If different people, because like I feel like
he'd be an advisor.
Yeah, I feel like the opportunities that they took to like make funny remarks and stuff were good opportunities. Like they're comedically should have been funny, but just the jokes themselves, it just.
Well, and I thought there was a
love story, and
yeah, I thought there was a lot of like good ideas in this. It just wasn't put together in an exciting way. You know, like the Kraken stuff was good. Like some of these. Like the Mixlings as an idea, as like a horror fantasy idea, is certainly something that can be good. And like the tattoos, and I like how Bully Boy was kind of handled, being an assassin. So like there's some good stuff in here. It just wasn't put together right, in my opinion. So I would almost be interested in a movie, because maybe if you simplify it down a little bit or streamline it, it might be more effective.
Mm-hmm. If it gets made, it's definitely gonna be like a Roku channel original.
There's better stuff out there. If we get this before we get any Cosmere adaptations, we might have to riot.
All right, last question I have for you, and then we'll end this thing up here. Zach, this is specifically a question for you, but also for all of us. This book has a 4.22 on Goodreads out of 5 as the rating, 17,000 reviews. Tell me what you think of that review.
Honestly, I haven't like looked too much at the comments, but I did see that review, and like I truly have no idea how it has a high of a rating. I truly cannot wrap my head around it. I do need to do some like digging. I think maybe we need to like audit Amazon, you know, since they own Goodreads, see if people are like buying it. Because
investigate.
It baffles me.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. That does seem pretty high. So that is interesting. Makes me think maybe I need to reread it again to get the full picture. But I'm not going to do that. So,
well, let me tell you, I work at a large retailer that sells a lot of books, and a lot of the people that I work with have read this book as like a book club. And I asked them about this after I finished it, and they all fucking loved it. Like one of their favorite books they've read this year.
Why? Like what did they like about it?
They loved the humor involved in it.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
We might be on the outside on this one. I don't know.
Don't show them this episode.
Yeah. I would never show anyone this episode.
Hashtag buried.
This is going to be put on the back burner if we are desperate for an episode. I'll tell you that. All right. Did you guys have any hot takes, predictions you wanted to get out there? Nothing, anything? I don't know.
I've kind of said everything
I
need it to be said about this.
I'll just throw on this last note. I thought the foreshadowing in this book were terrible. I thought they set up a lot of things that never came to fruition, or when they did come to fruition, sucked. So I just hated that. I'm talking about Fiddle. I'm talking about Witness Coin. I'm talking about Magic. I'm talking about the Mixlings. I'm talking about all of that. So
yeah,
wasn't a huge fan of that. All right, guys. Well, that was fun. Let's pick a book next time that Zach's in charge of picking the next book.
How do we know that it's going to be good?
I want to hear a book where Zach gives a review higher than 5. That's my goal for the next book.
Okay.
Thank you all for listening. This is the kind of the start of season 2. So I don't know when you're hearing this, but we're going to keep pumping out episodes here. So I appreciate you listening. Follow us on Twitter. I think the last time I posted was like 4 months ago. So appreciate you listening. As always, we are the Knights of the Hardcover.
Huzzah!